Good morning, folks. It's time for Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show about political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Join us for a stimulating, thought-provoking discussion. You'll get the facts as we focus on the real challenges facing Arizonans. Good morning, folks. This is Steve Williamson. Today we've got Mike Cosentino.
Yeah, I'm here, and we got a crew with us this morning. Yeah. Apparently, they think we need help after the election.
Yeah, the editorial board's checking up on us, and they're all here. Right. So, Bill Timmerman, Gary LeMaster.
Good morning.
And Dick Searle.
We're here to talk Mike and Steve down from the ledge.
That's right. Although we had great results on the national level, let's talk about that.
Yeah, the final national vote's not in, but it's 61,907,639 votes for President Obama, 58,648,640 for Romney. So it's about, 3 million difference?
Well, yeah, in truth, but Fox News will be saying that Obama lost the popular vote for the next,
they're having trouble with that. What does this mean? I mean, when we look at the Electoral College, it's a resounding victory. I mean, Obama won every state he won in the last thing, except for Indiana and North Carolina, which were sort of flukes. But the country is still divided. Is this going to solve anything?
Well,
are we
going to
move forward? What do you guys think?
326 electoral votes.
333 versus 206.
I'm sorry.
So it's a huge electoral victory.
Well, yeah. Once Florida came in for Obama, it made it look a whole lot more significant because you got that extra 20 some odd votes on the Obama side of the ledger.
In any other political climate, this would be called a landslide.
Well, it has, things like this have been called landslides when they work the other way.
Let's give it to Nate Silver, too.
Yeah, that's true.
Here's a guy that has accurately predicted. He predicted 333 electoral votes.
He
predicted every state race except for Heidi Heitkamp in North Dakota.
The background there is Nate Silver is a nationwide pollster. When the Republicans were listening to their unbiased pollsters, they were kept calling Romney the winner. Nate Silver nailed it, as Gary said, pretty right on.
Yeah. Well, Nate Silver started out in sports betting and started out a blog, and he was so good at this kind of thing that he was actually hired by the New York Times, so that you can find his column 538 on the New York Times
site.
But he started out as an individual. He was picked up because he was good.
Is there going to be a change in the attitude of Congress as a result of this? Is this really a mandate or anything like this?
I guess that it depends a lot. What do you think, Mike, on what the Republican reaction is? What we're seeing from the Tea Party and stuff is we're going to fight to the death kind of thing. We're going to, we're going to resist everything Obama wants to do for the near future. So it's, I don't see that there's this kind of respect when someone wins their presidency where they get a little bit of leeway. We gave it to Bush. When Bush first won, even though that was a contested reaction, let's see what the guy does.
Right.
I don't think this happens anymore. I don't know.
Yeah, the love lasted about, maybe a half a day, where the bipartisan, we're going to, join hands and fix all the problems together. And then all of the Tea Party stuff came pouring out about how they're going to hold their representatives responsible. They're not going to, they didn't send them to Washington to compromise at all. They're going to. And yet now, of course, we're going to talk about this. We picked up, it's 54 Democrats in the House. We picked up a couple seats there.
In the Senate.
In the Senate, I'm sorry. And what happened in the House? What's the final?
Well, there isn't a final toll yet, but we'll pick up a few seats in the House. House is heavily gerrymandered, folks, so that it changes in some ways. In different ways than the Senate. The Senate, it's a vote across the entire state, and it can't be gerrymandered or rigged or something like that. In that case, all of the Democrats went in with 21 incumbents and 21 seats that had to be voted on. And Republicans, I think, had 10. And the Democrats run all but one of them. And they picked up seats.
There you go.
Republican seat.
Well, there's two things I'd like to say about the national election. And the first is that we've been complaining for a year about the Republican war on science. In this case, it goes to show, I think, the fact that Romney believed he was going to win until practically the last minute because everybody was telling him he was going to win because the polls were skewed. And the truth is that the polls were based on valid statistical principles, and they showed an Obama lead throughout the latter 2 or 3 months of the election. And the Republicans simply refused to believe it, the same way they refused to believe in climate change. And the other thing, I think, is that what the Republicans have tried to do is resist the demographic changes that have occurred in the country, and they're beginning to lose that battle, I think. This country, the population of this country overall, looks a lot more like President Obama than it does like Mitt Romney.
One of my favorite bits on television in the last 20 years is Karl Rove's denial on Fox that when they called Ohio, and Rove was absolutely stunned because they were all convinced that they were going to win with a landslide. Romney didn't even write a concession speech prior to the evening. He had he knew exactly how many words he had in his acceptance speech or his victory speech.
Well,
but watching Rove in total denial and having the reporter, I forget her name on Fox, have to go to the numbers room and have scientists basically tell her, you know, that indeed Obama won. It's wonderful television. It's the best thing I've ever seen on Fox.
Well, Obama thought he'd stolen it, just like in 04. He thought they had the fix was in Ohio, and he couldn't believe that the numbers were such that the fix wasn't working.
Romney ran this ad in Ohio, which was about shipping Jeeps or shipping jobs to China from the Jeep company, and that it was like the whole lie that people bought about them making Obama putting in rules where you didn't have to do as much work to get on welfare, so forth and so on. That one was sort of diffused, and so people listened to that, and they could kind of they might believe it. But the Jeep had just hired 1,100 people in the last few months. Everybody in Ohio knew they were hiring. So that ad was really tactically stupid. They hadn't researched Ohio when they made up that lie. Up a lie that was visibly wrong.
Now there's lies, and then there's desperation lies. I mean, they've introduced a whole new level of lying into politics. Who thought it was possible? But these desperation lies are, as you're talking about, blatant lies. At least with the welfare thing, there was, even though it was a lie, it had some sort of half-truth basis. But so there's an article in The Nation, Post-Truth Democracy, and we've been living it for the last many years, and now, with the media is owned by 5 corporations, that's finally being discussed. And the amount of lies told in this election is just incredible.
Well, the other thing is the Republicans have been winning national elections now for a number of years, ever since the passage of the Civil Rights Act. That began the process. They've been winning elections with Christian fundamentalists, the New Confederacy, the Southern Strategy, and the Wall Street votes. And those combined, especially with the amount of money that's available to them because of who their support is, they have been able to hold the line against the demographic changes that are occurring all around us in the United States. And they've been doing it fairly successfully. So successfully, in fact, that they made, I think, some strategic mistakes this election. They attacked very large groups of voters, and they attacked them viciously. They attacked women. They attacked immigrants. They attacked people who have to work for a living. They called them bums. They called them freeloaders.
Well, you know why they did that, though? I mean, even though somebody said that the country looks a lot more like Barack Obama, the country votes a lot more like Mitt Romney.
Until you get people,
2012.
Until you get people really angry by insulting them as a class. And that is what Mitt Romney did. This 40%, 47% thing was devastating. I don't think nearly half the people in this country think of themselves as freeloaders, and I think they're pretty angry about a presidential candidate who's willing to call them freeloaders in public.
Well, let's also look at the voter suppression, you know, which I think that Romney felt that he was going to win, or was convinced he was going to win, just because of the fix being in Ohio and Florida.
Right.
You know, they cut down the polling hours, the early voting. They had huge long lines in both states, just because the people that had been targeted decided to stand up and get out and vote. And one of the best things about the election, in my view, is that Florida was totally irrelevant. That, you know, the election was over and done,
yeah.
And the governor in Florida had tried everything in his power to restrict the vote, and it didn't matter. It literally didn't matter.
If people are angry enough to stand in line for 8 hours to vote.
No kidding.
Then much of this these tactical shenanigans at the electoral commissions of the state don't have the effect that people think they're going to have.
You know, we can come back to the national. I know we all have a lot to say about the state races, the local,
because they were in many ways the opposite. Right, of the national.
Exactly. That's why we started talking about national. We wanted to lead with our best.
It was, in case you folks are heard other things, a massive Democratic victory in the Senate, even more so, even in some ways, than the presidency. The Republicans, Mitchell said, is we have one job, and that's to defeat Barack Obama, to ruin his presidency, and they couldn't do it. So, Mike, let's talk about Arizona.
On the national level, right. Well, you know, and just as we've talked about before, it seemed like we had great candidates. The Democrats had great candidates locally. Legislative District 6, our district, Angela LaFever, Doug
Ballard.
Ballard,
and Tom Chabon, you heard him all here on Democratic Perspective.
More than once. And the guys that won... Chester Crandall, the author of the bill to secede from to take over federal lands. Now, even though his proposal lost 2-1 statewide, he won his election in his district. Brenda Barton
by about 6,000 votes.
And she's the one that wants Arizona to become a nuclear waste disposal site.
Exactly. So obviously this wasn't about issues. I think that's this was about D's and R's, don't you think?
Well, I one of the things that she said was, well, that's kind of a messed up area anyway, so a little more pollution, a little more uranium won't hurt.
Yeah, it's all rocks and stuff.
Toxic waste, it's kind of a mess anyway, it's so let's just dump some more stuff in there.
That's right.
A nice attitude toward
it. I hate to think that the state that I live in is the last bastion of angry old white people, but
it is.
But I think, well, it's one of the last bastions. Don't forget, the solid South is still pretty solid if you look at the national electoral results. I mean, when you have Romney winning 70-30 in a place like South Carolina, Arizona is not the only that refuses to go along with the future, right?
On a positive note, in Arizona, it looks like that Democrats could control 5 of the 9 congressional districts.
On the federal level, yes.
On the federal level.
Yes, sir. Yeah, that's true. If when all these races are settled, when the cinema race is settled, and she's leading by 5,700 votes, she's increasing her lead, as we thought she would, as the absentee ballots and those kind of things come in. We could bet Ron Barber is...
He's up by 289 votes.
There we go.
I
knew somebody would know in this group.
That smells like a recount to me.
Yeah. So, but on the state level, let's talk about that. Steve Pierce from Prescott got replaced as Senate President by a guy named Andy Biggs. We're going to talk about him, and you guys know more about him than I do. Our own Andy Tobin, Republican, is still prevailed in the House as Chairman of the House of Representatives in Arizona. Even though the Democrats broke the supermajority in the Arizona legislature, they picked up, it's probably going to be 17-13 in the Senate. where it was, 21-9. And the House is probably going to go to 25-35. So that's better. You know, Democrats picked up seats, but not in LD6. So we lost our races here.
Is that mostly due to redistricting, or is that better candidates? What's the reason?
It can't all be due to redistricting. I would say there's probably two or three of those numbers. That's a good question, Dick. Are due to redistricting. The Republicans might say a little more, but they were very careful. This was the independent redistricting committee that Arizona has was excellent. They were very, very careful. They by design, they made certain safe Republican districts, they made certain safe Democratic districts, and they made certain competitive districts, which I think is absurd to begin with. I think should lay a matrix over the whole thing and let the vote happen rather than doing any of the gerrymandering. But we picked up two or three seats that way. The rest were excellent, were good candidates. The Democrats have never run such qualified people.
Was redistricting Tom Chabon's undoing as far as the...
Oh, good question.
Yeah, yeah. Probably was, yes.
Yeah.
Tom had run successfully.
Well, I think he lose, was it the reservation, am I correct
in that?
Yeah,
the reservations, the Navajo Hopi areas were no longer included in his district. And everybody... talked about LD6, but LD6 had about 10,000 advantage to the Republicans, and our candidates overcame about 5,000, about half of the voter registration advantage to that the Republicans had. They just couldn't overcome the rest. Romney had probably coattails here. He got over 1 million votes. Obama got about 800,000, about 54% to 44%. That's a big lead here. It's the kind of lead that was the other direction elsewhere.
Sedona voted strongly for our candidates, but people in the Democratic Party leaders are blaming me because I live in Cottonwood for losing because Camp Curdy and Cottonwood voted overwhelmingly Republican.
Yeah, well, Gary lives down there, too. We're blaming Gary.
Oh,
as
yeah,
well as
blame
you.
Him.
Me, too.
We got three lower Verde Valley people right here on the show to blame.
One of the really sad things to me is that the Verde Valley continues to vote against its own self-interest. We had an opportunity to have a legislature from Sedona, but you know, at least closer part of the Verde Valley,
right?
And we had a chance to get another county supervisor out of the Verde Valley, and you know, now we have one against four on the other side of the mountain. But we continue to vote against our own self-interest and put all the power elsewhere. So we now have representation from Prescott and Prescott Valley and from Payson and Snowflake in that area, and zero.
And they
from
do that to avoid voting for a Democrat.
Right.
Well, I wonder now, another thing is the propositions. It seems to me that the education 204 went down. Also, the local override went down.
That's a big deal.
And that certainly seems to me to be affected by a general anti-tax attitude, or what? I'd like some comment on that.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's anti-tax. I think there may be, that, especially in Sedona, that they're looking at the tax hike, the federal tax rate going up over 250. And so maybe they, I don't know if people think about things this deeply, but the defeat of the override is shocking.
This was set up. The overrides are in a lot of ways a phony thing, where the districts have to keep asking for more money. It was put in by a conservative legislature to kind of control things. And so I think it's every 4 years they have to go and ask for an override.
5 years.
And Sedona had never voted against the override until this election.
Well, you know, I think one of the things that may have soured people on that also is the fact that we all got together and voted a one penny increase in the sales tax for the schools, and the state legislature took the money and put it somewhere else.
That's right.
And I think a lot of people felt like, well, if that's the way they're going to play it, I'm not you know, you can't keep coming back to me for more money for the schools when then you take it away from the schools and put it someplace else.
I've got to admit, I'm not terribly sorry to see 204 fail. I voted for it, but because I want to see better funding of our schools. But it's the wrong way to do it through a sales tax. It's the sales tax in the state is really hurting business.
I know business,
especially
people.
Small business, and I think there are better ways of doing it. Now finally Brewer is talking about looking for new ways to fund schools after they've already taken, she and the legislature have taken, what, $3 billion out of school financing over 4 years.
Well, I think one problem here is equity in offering education. And Scottsdale, if they tax based on property as an example, they're going to have gazillions of dollars.
Right.
And you get down in Yuma or some other place further out, the tax base isn't there. So I think there ought to be some sort of a general tax that supports education. Admittedly, sales tax may not be the best answer.
The problem with sales taxes is that they're hideously regressive.
Yeah.
You know, they hit the poor people the hardest. And they're not going to ever be a solution to the problem of funding education.
Well, that's what happened at 204. I know pro-education business people that voted against this tax.
It's especially heinous in Arizona, where there are no exceptions to the sales tax for food and clothing. In a lot of the states in the Midwest, those are exempted. So here,
California also,
and those are necessities that suddenly people at the poorest level of our society are having to pay sales tax on essentials.
Well,
that
you don't
really
have
is
to
regressive.
Pay sales tax on a golf club membership, for example.
Or mining equipment.
It's a scandal. I mean, we supported 204 because there just seemed no other way to get money to the school. And we thought that they had locked in how the money would be spent this time, where it couldn't be stolen. But I don't think we got that message out. I agree with you guys. It was an ambiguous. You have to call these things. And we only because we were so worried about Arizona education that we supported it. We're going to have trouble attracting high-end businesses here if we don't get this educational system working well. And it has to be working well from kindergarten through the colleges.
Well, this is one time the other side has a point. When you have the second highest sales tax rate in the country, and you can say, and that's the phrase I believe that defeated it. When they got on TV and said the second highest, boy, that was a little hard to talk against.
Well, you know, sports franchises figured this out a long time ago, right? If the New York Yankees have got more money, what you do is you take the entire pot of money and you divide it up amongst the teams so that the teams will be competitive, or you have a draft system. And so if you were to fund schools from property taxes, you would have to have some sort of redistribution scheme for the poorer areas if you wanted to have equal education throughout the state or even throughout a city where you have poor areas and rich areas. But this requires fundamental reform, and it requires people to agree on it. The thing about the sales tax, the reason everything keeps getting dumped on the sales tax is that the sales tax is invisible. An income tax or a property tax is not invisible. When you get that bill at the end of the year, you know, your hair goes up on the back of your neck, whereas if you're paying 10 cents on every dollar for sales tax, somehow you don't notice.
Unless you buy a car or something of that sort.
Well.
Let's talk about the, with the override, a question I have is there a problem with confusion over the terminology being used? You know, Mike tells me that the primary costs of education are like teacher salaries and books and things like that are called maintenance and operation.
That's right.
And it sounds like you're paying a huge amount for janitorial services and roof repairs. And I wonder if that plays into it.
Yeah, well, you know, obviously, Kara McClellan can answer this better. But three parts to a budget: maintenance and operation, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's the daily operating stuff of the school, including salaries and benefits, soft capital and hard capital. But yeah, so that's was confusion, I think, that this goes to the maintenance and operations side of the budget. But that's what overrides do. And that's the other thing. I mean, at any given time, according to the guys at the state organization of school business officers, 90% of the Arizona districts are under an override. In other words, it's become so common a thing. Now, just to clarify what's going to happen, this is the end of the third full year of funding. So next, then it starts to step down for the next 2 years. So the budget next year, because the override didn't pass, will be 2/3 of what the amount was going to be. And then in the fifth year, it'll be 1/3. So you're going to see huge impact. They're not going to take the full override away from the district next year. They'll take 1/3 of it away. And then in the fifth year, another 1/3 will come away.
So how did we do on these other wacky propositions?
Well, the worst of them, they're seizing our national public lands and handing them over to the gentle mercies of the Arizona legislature, failed big time, 2-1.
Still got some Americans in Arizona, how about
that? Yeah. As I like to say, I'm an American first and an Arizonan second. And I think, you know, that if you look at the logic of this, if I move to Germany, I'm still an American, but I'm no longer an Arizonan, really. I may have lived in Arizona. So I think that the defeat of that bill, I think, was probably the best thing that happened. The rest of the propositions were either have no consequences practically or a lot of the bad ones were defeated. The proposition on state lands that the Sierra Club and the Grand Canyon Trust and Democrats endorsed, land trading passed, and we were able to convince people that there was enough protection locked into this that it would work.
Yeah, 118 and 119 were the two you're talking about, and that those two passed. 116 passed, the Small Business Job Creation Act, but that actually had bipartisan support, if nothing else for its name, the Small Business Creation Act. I don't think anybody wanted to be seen voting against that.
Let's talk about 121 before we run out of time, because that was an interesting one that failed. Is the one that the proposition that basically would be the top two primary, where you could have two Republicans or two Democrats. I'm surprised it failed as much as it did.
Yeah.
Well, everybody was against it. There were huge amounts of out-of-state money poured in against it.
Well, the political parties were against it.
And Republican Party was totally against it. So were the Democrats, although Democrats never took a public position or a official position.
Yeah, that's true. All right, listen, we don't have a lot of time left. Are we going to talk about money on this show? I think we should. I think we are Democratic perspective.
It comes to mind. I think that they had a decision in California recently regarding one of the super PACs, which required that they reveal their sources, and somebody might comment on that particular issue because it was rather opaque answer.
Yes, but that's not the money I was talking about. I'm talking about supporting Democratic perspectives. I'm talking about being on the air for a year and a half.
More important.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Forget about, don't. In fact, we'll take one of those. We'll take the interest on one of those.
We don't have the power to tax anybody, folks.
And we don't get exactly a lot of dark money flowing
not
into
a lot
Democratic
of dark
perspective.
Money. Not a lot of dark money. No, it's mostly money I would waste on, like, breakfast or something, absurd like that.
Maybe we could convince Karl Rove that we're a super PAC.
There we go. Or we're a threat.
And they could put a whole lot of money into
Well, we got to get some Democrats elected in Arizona before anybody's going to think we're worth supporting, I'm afraid.
But seriously, Democratic perspective did make, we've been on for a year and a half. We did make some progress, we meaning Democrats this year. We got some people in the House, people in the Senate coming on. Our next show, we've got a variety of things. We want to talk about the Constitution, I think, next time. There's been a lot of constitutional questions, including electoral politics, electoral votes, that sort of outdated thing.
In our whole election process, even our president has called for fixing the polling problems.
And just to follow up with Mike, if you want to give us some money, if you feel like you really need to give us some money, you can go to vvid.org. That's our website, and there's a PayPal button.
We have an incredible body of work there, guys. We have all the podcasts for the last couple of years on there, vvid.org. You can listen to all our shows and see if we're worthy of donations. Thank you.
And listening to Democratic Perspective, brought to you by the Verde Valley Independent Democrats, a weekly talk show focusing on the political issues facing the Verde Valley, Sedona, Northern Arizona, and the nation at large. Catch us every Monday morning after the 8 o'clock news, right here on AM 780 KAZM. It's beautiful out there, folks. Have a great day.